As time went on, she got to know her colleagues better. One was Josephine Smith, a 16-year-old girl with a round face, brown bobbed hair and a snub nose. She had used to work for Bamberger's too, as a sales lady, but left to earn the much higher wage of a dial painter. Although the girls weren't salaried, they were paid piecework for the number of dials they painted at an average rate of 1.5 cents a watch. The most talented workers could walk away with an astonishing pay packet. Some earned more than three times the average factory floor worker. Some even earned more than their fathers. They were ranked in the top 5% of female wage earners and on average took home $20 a week, though the fastest painters could easily earn more, sometimes as much as double, giving the top earners an annual salary of $2,080. The girls lucky enough to gain a position felt blessed. Josephine, Catherine learned as they talked, was of German heritage, just like Catherine herself. In fact, most dial painters were the daughters or granddaughters of immigrants. Newark was full of migrants, hailing from Germany, Italy, Ireland, and elsewhere. It was one of the reasons the company had opened the studio in the city in the first place, for the large immigrant communities provided a workforce for all sorts of factories. New Jersey was nicknamed the Garden State for its high agricultural production, but in truth it was just as productive industrially. At the turn of the century, the business leadership of Newark had labelled it the City of Opportunity, and as the girls themselves were finding out, it lived up to its name. It all made for a thriving metropolis. The nightlife after the factory's close was vibrant. Newark was a beer town with more saloons per capita than any other American city, and the workers made their downtime count. The dial painters embraced the social bonhomie. They sat together to eat lunch in the workroom at the Newark plant, sharing sandwiches and gossip over the dusty tables. As the weeks passed, Catherine observed the challenges as well as the attractions of dial painting. Miss Rooney's constant observation as she walked up and down the studio, and the ever-present dread of being called into the darkroom to be reprimanded for poor work. Above all else, the girls feared being accused of wasting the expensive paint, which could ultimately be a dismissible offence. But although Catherine could see that there were downsides, she still longed to join the women in the main room. She wanted to be one of the shining girls. A quick learner, Catherine soon excelled at her inspecting, not only perfecting the art of correcting defective dials with her lip-pointed brush, but also becoming adept at brushing off the dust with her bare hand or removing excess paint with her fingernail, as was the technique taught her. She worked as hard as she could, longing for promotion. Finally, towards the end of March, her perseverance paid off. "I was asked to paint dials," she wrote excitedly. "I said I would like to try it." Catherine had achieved her ambition through merit, but there were also wider forces at work in that spring of 1917. Dial painters were about to be in demand like never before. The company now needed all the women it could get. Chapter 2. For the past 2.5 years, the war in Europe had left America mostly untouched, except for the economic boom it brought. The majority of Americans were happy to stay out of the horrific trench warfare happening across the Atlantic, stories of which had reached them undiluted by distance. But in 1917, the neutral position became untenable. On 6th of April, just a week or so after Catherine's promotion, Congress voted America into the conflict. It would be, President Wilson declared, the war to end all wars.